from Illinois Public Media. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. Listeners on the program might recall the farm crisis of 1980s, or I should say of the 1980s, when there was a massive number of bankruptcies and foreclosures affecting farmers across America, and particularly in the Midwest. This is what prompted the Farm Aid concert to start here in Champaign-Urbana. Now, I bring this up because some of the things that were happening to farmers then are resonating today. For the third year in a row, farm bankruptcies and related debts are on the rise, and that is for a multitude of reasons, and that is why we are starting our program with this topic today. Joining us now to talk more about this is Tara Sun, a graduate student at the Northwestern University Medill School of Journalism. She wrote a piece about this for Capital News Illinois that looks into the data behind farm bankruptcies and what is affecting the industry. Tara, welcome to the 21st show.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Kevin Semlow, Director of Governmental Affairs and Commodities for the Illinois Farm Bureau. Kevin, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
And finally, Gary Acey is a hog and grain farmer in Osco, Illinois, near the Quad Cities. Gary's also a crop insurance agent. Gary, welcome to you as well.
Well, thank you for having me.
Listeners, you can join us today at 800-222-9455. What is the economic situation like for you, especially if you are a farmer or know of farmers in your life? We'd love to hear your story. 800-222-9455. All right, Tara, I'm going to start with you. What do the numbers show, beyond what I said in the intro there, what do the numbers show with regard to farm bankruptcies?
Yes, I can elaborate further on that. So just giving a quick data out there. So as you said, Illinois farm bankruptcy has raised for the third straight years. So giving some numbers out there. So family farm bankruptcy actually surged 46% nationwide in 2025. 7%, and to that it's more than just the numbers. So it's not just one bad harvest. That means farmers are producing record crops but losing money on every bushel, and there are several factors to that. For instance, their biggest export market has effectively been declining or shut down, and their costs for everything from fertilizer to interest rates are increasing throughout the years. So it's not just a seasonal slump, and the reporting talks more about the cost and the factors to that.
All right, Kevin, I'm going to bring you in. Does that resonate with what you're hearing from the farmers you talk to?
Yeah, we're seeing some very financially difficult times for farmers. As Tara had pointed out, low commodity prices, high input costs. I mean, even if we look currently at diesel fuel prices, which is one of the bigger inputs that our members have to deal with, are extremely high. But since we've seen a downturn in the farm economy in the last couple of years, this is a compounding problem. As farmers are able to use their positive resources in from good years, those reserves are drawing down. And most farmers go out and get an operating loan every year through their bank to help do that. And now banks are saying, you know, it's going to be much more difficult to do that because you don't have the reserves. We're looking at high input costs and all those things. And so I imagine this fall will probably be much harder on farmers than we have seen for many years. And we'll see what the banks can do to help them continue their operations. I think one of the increases that we're seeing in bankruptcies, not just in the ag community, but also for consumer, has gone up in the last couple of years. So I think it's just an indication of the overall tight economy that we're seeing. Farmers are just blessed enough that they have a special means through the Chapter 12, and that's what we measure because it's specifically just for farms, that we can see those numbers specifically on agriculture.
Gary Acey, I want to bring you into the conversation. First, just tell us a little bit about your farm. What sort of operations you do there?
Okay, I have a corn and soybean rotation on about 300 acres here. I currently no-till cover crops and use manure as my principal source of fertilizer. I have lifelong association with the hog industry. You know, been around pigs most of my life. There's 5,000 pigs that are my closest neighbors, closer than anybody else. But I do not have any day-to-day management in that anymore, but still in very attached to the hog industry.
So, have you been seeing evidence of some of these financial strains that we've been talking about, the bankruptcies, the debt, that sort of thing, either in your own business or in people around you?
Yes, I experienced the 80s myself. I was farming in, and you had to make a lot of changes during those time periods to survive. I see farmers now with margins getting tighter or looking closely at expenses and seeing where they can trim on those expenses. Some are starting to plant non-GMO corn because it's cheaper to buy and cheaper to grow. Looking at fertilizer costs closely, and also where I specialize in the crop insurance side, people are looking at that better to try to get a better safety net for them.
So, Tara, let's break down a little bit in a little bit more detail some of the reasons why farm bankruptcies are going up, starting with falling crop prices and an unstable export market. What's going on there?
Yeah, so in my story, I touch base on what's going on in the export market. So, as we all know, so the trigger now and then is the unstable export market since 2025, when China shut down the export for the US. The market has been impacted drastically. And just looking at the data on the top of the story, that because of those tariff and that US imposes on the Chinese products, actually last year, last September marked the first months in a while that there's US soybean exports to China hit zero for the first time since 2018. So these impacted Illinois farmers a lot because now they have tons of record harvest beans that have nowhere to go, actually got slowed down. And those low prices further impacted their production as well, because now they are losing money on every bushel. Because Gary Assay, that interviewed, he mentioned that to some point the farmers are still unable to sell their crops because the price are just too low at this point.
Well, yeah, let's talk more about that. And Kevin, the economics here, supply and demand, right? If how has that played out with these overseas markets, right? This is part of the trade war. Maybe you can talk more about sort of what's behind what's been happening here.
I think one of the things that we all have to realize is that farmers are price takers. It's not a true supply and demand situation like we all learned in our high school economics class, that I can just withhold my crop and say I want more money. It's set by markets, and those markets are out of the control of farmers. And a lot of that is speculation based on what's happening in these international markets, and the trades battles that we have seen have come into great impact in driving down those prices. And we've seen more competition from other parts of the world that are producing the same crops that our farmers produce. So it's a very highly competitive market. One of the things that we in agriculture are really pushing for right now are some increased trade opportunities. We've got the USMCA, which is the trade agreement between us, Canada, and Mexico, is under negotiations and review, and we're strong proponents that we need those markets. Everything from corn and soybean to cheese to milk products to pork to beef, all those things are very crucial to allowing there to be markets for our farmers, not only to sell us a safe, economical food product here in the United States, in the Midwest especially, but also across North America and across the world.
And let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We are talking today about the rise in farm bankruptcies that we've been seeing across the country. Also, related debt is on the rise. And we're talking about why that is with Kevin Semlow, who's Director of Governmental Affairs and Commodities for the Illinois Farm Bureau, Gary Acey, who's a hog, and or I should say now a grain farmer in Osco, Illinois, near the the Quad Cities. He's also a crop insurance agent. And Tara Sun, who's with Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism, wrote a piece on this for Capital News Illinois, looking at the data behind farm bankruptcies and what's affecting the industry. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Gary, let me ask you about that crop insurance aspect of this. How does that work? When can it be used? When can it not be used, if that makes sense, in terms of, you know, some of these lack of markets that farmers are experiencing, especially for beans?
Yes. Crop insurance for farmers is set up to provide protection against income or price loss or production loss. The price figured into the insurance is set in February every year, uses futures prices to set that. The production side, you use your production history from the past. This is a yearly policy for the farmers. They sign up once a year and they go through the year and enter acreage reports and production reports to see if you get a claim or not at the end of the year. But insurance, crop insurance is a safety net. And I'll put an example here. You know, the farmers are a tightrope walker. We have a safety net underneath them. The safety net there is to catch them if they fall, but it's not going to stop them from falling. You know, so crop insurance, for the most part, is a safety net. It doesn't guarantee you're going to make a profit for the year, but it minimizes any losses that could potentially happen.
And is it different? How does the crop insurance work for somebody who is, you mentioned your deep connection to the hog industry, right? Is it more just for people who are growing, you know, crops by definition, or do animal farmers, are they potentially affected by what's happening as well?
Livestock farmers can also buy insurance. Is revenue only, and it's again a yearly policy, but they can add coverage every business day throughout the year. It is something that helps, again, it gives a safety net to the livestock farmers, but it does not insure against production loss. So, you know, if you had a disease that came to your barn and lost a lot of hogs, that does not protect there, but just protects against revenue.
So, Kevin, I'm going to come back to you. I think we've mentioned briefly the idea of finding newer markets or different markets for Illinois exports with China taking shutting things down as much as they had. Can you talk more about that, you know, statewide efforts to try and find either to get China buying again or to find different markets?
Well, I think we have to look at the total global market for exports for commodities from Illinois. We don't just ship to China. China was a large buyer, especially of soybeans and some other products. But there are continually trade negotiations going on with all kinds of trade partners across the world. And we're always interested in looking at those. And we have some unique challenges with exports right now with the tariff wars. And so we're continually reaching out to through the Department of Agriculture and other USTR and some other trade organizations to look for new markets all the time. Here at Farm Bureau, we took a market study tour here earlier this spring down to Mexico to look at that. And we take it for granted that we've got these great trade partners right across the border. And with the USMCA agreement, we can transport most of our goods pretty easily by truck directly from the farm if necessary or through other food processors and handlers. So we're constantly looking for those efforts, and we work with those trade groups to make sure that there's plenty of opportunities for us to move those products together. And we just got to get this trade wars calmed down so that we can be more competitive in the marketplaces.
Gary, do you hear a lot of talk about the trade war? I mean, is this, at the wherever the hangout is for farmers in your area?
Yes, trade wars are a large concern for farmers right now. You know, right now, for the most producers, the prices are below break even, and they would like to see, you know, markets, you know, help support the price better. You know, trading with other countries always helps with the price, whether it's pork, beef, or corn or soybeans. You know, trading with other countries does help the bottom line of the farmer, and it's a big concern for farmers. And, you know, there are, you know, have been several payments come from the government towards farmers, which, you know, the farmers will take that, but they would much rather have the price coming from marketing and the markets and getting a payment from the government.
All right, we're going to take a pause here. We need to take a break on the program. We'll continue talking about the rise in farm bankruptcies and farm debt that we've been seeing in the last few years, both across the country and specifically here in Illinois. We'll talk about what it actually means when a farm has to declare bankruptcy, how that differs from other forms of bankruptcy people might be familiar with. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. This is the 21st Show. We'll be back in a moment. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the struggles facing farmers and the fact that bankruptcies among farmers have continued to grow for three consecutive years now. We're talking about this with Kevin Semlow, Director of Governmental Affairs and Commodities for the Illinois Farm Bureau, Gary Acey, a hog and grain farmer and crop insurance agent based in Osco, Illinois, and Tara Sun, a graduate student at the Northwestern University Medill School of Journalism, who wrote a piece about this for Capital News Illinois. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. All right, Tara, talk about the rising cost of farm land use and how that's part of this story.
Yes. So I'll talk about the total farm debt. It's going to be forecasted to hit a record of $624.7 billion in 2026. And we can talk about the land. So even though crop prices are low, the cost of renting farmland remains incredibly high. And in my story, I talked to one of the economists, and she talked about in Illinois or in the Midwest, about 80% of the farmers rent a land. And this increasing cost is going to have an impact on the farmers. And so this means that farmers are paying top dollars for the land, but they can't make top dollar from the crops they grow it. And there's also the interest, as the interest rate has been increased over the last few years. So this means that farmers are borrowing more just to stay in business or keep their farm going. And the volume of new farm operating loans are also jumping up compared to the prior year. So this cycle is kind of a warning sign when I'm exploring the story, because the debt is growing faster than their assets. And this is the bigger picture that I see in the reporting I've done.
Gary, I wonder if that resonates with your situation at all.
Well, yes. You know, land rent is very competitive. There are always producers out there looking to rent more land and willing to pay up for it. And so it keeps land rents at a constant, if not higher cost as we go forward. And also, she mentioned the interest rates. If, you know, you're starting to have to borrow more, you know, you have to pay interest on that. And every time that interest rate goes higher, that is something else that has to be paid for before anything else is paid for, and raises your cost of production. So that puts additional stress on the farmer.
Kevin, there was an effort in the Illinois General Assembly to pass a piece of legislation called the Farm Family Preservation Act. What would that do?
That addresses the way that the estate tax that we have in Illinois, that when anyone with a value of more than $4 million, currently the way the law is written, has to pay in taxes off of that. It forces families to pay those taxes. You either have to take out an enormous amount of loans to pay that off, or you have to sell off sometimes a quarter to a third of your operating farm, which then makes your farm not as profitable. So we've been pushing legislation to see reform for farmers in the estate tax, so that we can see some changes in that and more accurately reflect the true value of property, especially as Tara had pointed out, the land values have gone up, and that's one of the main key components when the state is looked at. So we're pursuing that. We continue to get close to getting that legislation called, and we will continue to promote that so that we can keep family farms while they're dealing with these higher input costs and rising land costs. When there is an unfortunate loss in their family, they can keep that family in that farm in their family.
You know, keeping Gary with the subject, or I should say Kevin, with the subject of Springfield, how would you rate the job lawmakers are doing in terms of, you know, looking out for Illinois farmers?
I think one of the biggest challenges that agriculture has in the state of Illinois is that many legislators don't represent agricultural districts. Most of our legislators are from urban areas. Even here in across central Illinois, most of our legislators are from urban areas, and they just don't have the firsthand knowledge of how agriculture works. So the Illinois Farm Bureau, along with all the other commodity groups, including the Soybean Association, the Corn Growers Association, the Beef and Pork Associations, we work really hard to educate them so that their decisions, they understand how they impact agriculture. I think we've got an open ear of the legislature, but it just doesn't come second nature to them. It takes a little bit more work on behalf of farmers and our organizations in educating them.
So, Kevin, let me ask you, coming back to this idea of bankruptcy, what does going into bankruptcy mean for a farmer? And how does that differ from, you know, the sort of bankruptcy that people may be familiar with from, you know, having high medical bills or just too much household debt?
Yeah, most of us are familiar with, I think, what are called Chapter 7 or Chapter 13 bankruptcies, which are consumer, mainly towards individuals and businesses. Farmers have a specific, unique process called Chapter 12. It's very similar to a Chapter 13. But one of the biggest differences is since farmers don't get paid every month, they get paid in seasonal cycles generally. It's when they sell their crop or they sell their livestock. A Chapter 12 bankruptcy allows you to structure your debt in a way that you can pay back your lenders in a way that when you get paid. So it gives a lot more flexibility with that. It also allows the farmer to continue to sell and buy assets such as land and equipment without having to go to the court and get permission, because a lot of that happens very quickly. And if you have to go to the court to get permission, that takes 30, 60 days. This allows some flexibility there. It was really drawn in 86 when they passed this law on the federal level to help farmers to restructure and be able to come back much more successfully.
Come back. So not like, you know, we see with businesses where there's often a liquidation element to it. And it's, you know, especially if it's a family owned business, that can be a huge stress on the family and it could be the end of a business. Do we see that in farming as well? Yeah.
There are points when you get to that where you have to a farm is not financially viable and does go completely out of business. But the Chapter 12 was written in such a way that it helps a farmer spread those payments out over 3 or 5 years in a way so that they can come back and bounce back. Because as we see, if you look at the commodity prices, they ebb and flow. Right now we're at a very low point. So the goal of the Chapter 12 is a restructuring, allowing you to restructure your debt so that you can get through this lull so that hopefully that when we see the markets rebound, you can come back and keep your farm.
Gary, what options do farmers have before they might have to consider bankruptcy?
Well, some of the general things they can do, you know, maybe sell some assets, look at maybe some off-farm employment, take a close look at their farm operations, and they have several enterprises, you know, look closely at them. If there's enterprises costing you a lot of money, maybe get out of the enterprise and focus more on the others, you know, or maybe diversification might help you too. So, you know, either specialize or diversification are two things that can be done there. But, you know, just, you generally have to look at your expenses too, and work on doing the best you can on the expenses and the income.
You know, I also wanted to mention, you mentioned earlier that you are use manure as your fertilizer. I gather you're into sustainable farming. Is that better or harder for a farm's finances when we are, you know, in a period like this?
Right now, our farmers are looking at it, but if they have a operation where their income isn't real great right now and they're operating those pretty good size, a lender may look at them cross-eyed a little bit if they want to try some of these practices. But also, there are more and more incentives coming along to help farmers with this and finally getting larger amounts. And a big thing, it's possibly coming down the line, looks pretty close right now, is 45Z credits for farmers that sell corn to an ethanol plant. There are potential for pretty good size payments there for those operations, you know. But on my own operation, you know, I use no-till cover crops and manures, the main fertilizer source, and you know, I have records to show that my farm is net greenhouse gas negative and is securing carbon in the soil, which long-term, those are very good things. But starting this process can be tricky and put you a little more at risk. You know, it's I'd say that cover crops aren't easy, but they are very rewarding.
Gary Acey is a farmer in Osco, Illinois. We've also been speaking with Kevin Semlow from the Illinois Farm Bureau and Tara Sun with Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism. Wrote a piece on this for Capital News Illinois. Thank you, all three of you, for being with us today and sharing your knowledge with us here on the 21st Show.